Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have an in-depth look at today's cannabis enforcement activity by the Humboldt Sheriff's Department. But first, some local updates. This is KMUD News. In the Arcata-McKinleyville area, here's an update from PG&E on what caused today's outage in Arcata and McKinleyville.
Hi, this is Megan McFarland, spokesperson for PG&E. So earlier today, we had a large outage in the Arcata area, impacting about 2,940 customers. PG&E immediately dispatched three trouble workers, those are our first responders, to the scene. What we found on the scene was a wire down that was arcing, so there can be like flashes with the arcing. There were reports in the public domain of a pole fire or a transformer blown up. We did not identify either of those, just the arcing wire down. Currently, PG&E is on site. We're making assessments, making sure the area is safe. Then we're going to start working on repairs to get those customers back up and running. Because we're still in the assessment phase, we don't know the estimated time of restoration. And at this point, we actually do not know the cause. That's something that we are definitely looking into.
By the time of this broadcast recording, power to all but 29 PG&E customers had been restored. We're glad this widespread outage only lasted a matter of hours. Next, in Trinity County. Trinity County has released the draft environmental impact report for the Trinity County General Plan update, marking an important milestone in the county's long-term planning process. The public is invited to review the document and submit comments during a 47-day public review period beginning Wednesday, July 15th, and ending Monday, August 31st. The General Plan is the state-mandated document that guides how and where Trinity County will potentially grow and develop over the next 25 years. The update addresses critical issues including land use, transportation, housing, conservation, open space, and public safety, and will help establish county priorities and guide future decision-making. The General Plan update is intended to reflect the community's vision for Trinity County's future, balance growth and conservation, protect the county's quality of life, establish clear expectations for development, promote efficient and orderly growth, and incorporate a comprehensive and inclusive public outreach process. Prepared in accordance with the California Environmental Quality Act, the draft evaluates potential environmental impacts associated with the proposed general plan update. The analysis addresses a broad range of topics, including air quality, biological and cultural resources, greenhouse gas emissions, water quality, land use, transportation, public services, utilities, wildfire, and cumulative impacts. The draft identifies toxic air contaminant construction emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, and construction noise impacts as significant and unavoidable despite feasible mitigation measures. All other environmental impacts were determined to be less than significant or less than significant with mitigation. To review and comment, the draft EIR, notice of availability, and project background documents are available for public review through the Trinity County Community Development Department's Planning and Environmental Review webpage, and also on the project website, trinity2050.com. Printed copies of the draft are also available for review during normal business hours at the Trinity County Community Development Department in Weaverville. And at the Trinity County Library in Weaverville, Trinity Center Branch Library, and Hayfork Branch Library. Written comments must be received by 5 p.m. on August 31st to receive a formal response addressing significant environmental issues. Comments may be submitted by email, postal mail, or hand delivery to the Trinity County Community Development Department, 530 Main Street in Weaverville, or email trinity2050@trinitycounty.org. Following this public review period, the county will prepare a final EIR, including responses to comments received on the draft. The county will consider the environmental analysis and public input as it continues its deliberations on the general plan update. From the Yurok Tribe, The Yurok Tribe Fisheries Department and Condor Aviation, along with project partners, will begin conducting low-elevation helicopter missions to map the physical characteristics of 257 miles of the Klamath River Channel from Lake Iwana to the estuary. The helicopter is equipped with high-resolution remote sensing instruments to capture extremely accurate topographic data. The information will be primarily used to evaluate how the river changes in response to the recent removal of four dams near the California and Oregon border. In addition to aircraft operations, crews from the Yurok Tribe and Karuk Tribe will be collecting data from boats. The aerial and boat-based data collection project will begin July 15th and run through early August. During this time of year, it is common to see low-flying helicopters collecting water from the river to douse forest fires. Please don't be alarmed if you see a helicopter with tail number N1525 flying near the water. The Klamath River is healing from more than a century of dams that disrupted the river's natural flow regime, compromised water quality, and restricted sediment dynamics. These impairments were largely responsible for the sharp reduction in the Klamath salmon, steelhead, Pacific lamprey, and sturgeon populations. The removal of the four dams reopened approximately 400 miles of habitat within the mainstream Klamath and its tributaries, including newly accessible streams above Upper Klamath Lake. Less than 2 years after the dams were decommissioned, spring and fall Chinook salmon have passed the former dam sites and have begun recolonizing formerly inaccessible streams in California and Oregon. Dam removal not only expanded the amount of habitat available to salmon, but also increased the geographic distribution and genetic diversity of populations throughout the Klamath Basin. This greater diversity enhances the species' overall resilience, proving its ability to adapt to changing environmental conditions in the future. While these early benefits are encouraging, full ecosystem recovery will require time, sustained effort, and long-term monitoring, with more significant results expected to emerge over the coming years. And up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. The Howard Buffett Foundation-funded helicopter was out doing cannabis enforcement work and surveillance today, KMUD News reports. Today, July 15th, was the second day in a row that Southern Humboldt saw continued aggressive low flyovers by the Humboldt Sheriff's Department. Via the Howard Buffett Foundation-funded NCCSC Black Helicopter that is used for cannabis enforcement activities. Starting at around 8:30 a.m. this morning, the helicopter, tail number N487HB, was just south of Garberville when public FAA tracking was turned off. Turning off that tracking indicates that enforcement activity is ongoing. What followed was excessive and perhaps even more invasive than yesterday's cannabis enforcement operations. The helicopter made its way to a number of well-known growing areas and documented a series of legal and DCC-licensed cannabis farms. Why the Humboldt Sheriff's Department believes they should be documenting the properties of so many local growers is currently unknown. The Northern California Coalition to Safeguard Communities, or NCCSC, who funds the cannabis enforcement helicopter, states that its primary mission is to combat human and labor trafficking. Even at the height of disappearance and trafficking concerns in Humboldt County a decade ago, it is very unlikely to have occurred on so many publicly known and licensed cannabis farms. This operation seemed personal, with Sheriff William Hansel currently in Virginia testifying on behalf of multiple conservative states to prevent cannabis from being rescheduled from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. How that rescheduling impacts efforts to combat human trafficking is also very unclear. The helicopter made its way around Southern Humboldt in the mid-morning hours, doing enforcement work in the Edersburg area, followed by a significant amount of time in Salmon Creek. One Salmon Creek cannabis grower remarked, quote, "I've never been flown so low in my life." The Black Cannabis Enforcement Helicopter then made its way back to Ukiah, where it refueled and took off at 11:03 a.m. Unlike during the morning operations, the helicopter did not have tracking on in between enforcement activity and turned off tracking quickly after takeoff. Whether that is legally allowed is unclear, as tracking should only be turned off during actual enforcement activity per a typical understanding of FAA guidelines. The helicopter was still spotted by our communications network, transiting over Reed Mountain and back over Salmon Creek. The helicopter then headed northwest and started enforcement activity in the Mattole Valley, which had not been the case yesterday. Many cannabis growers in the Panther Gap, Petrolia, and Honeydew area reported seeing the helicopter at extremely low altitude looking at their properties. Much of that activity was during the noon hour. By 1:38 p.m., the helicopter used by the Humboldt Sheriff's Department for cannabis enforcement had landed at the Arcata Airport for another refueling stop. The black helicopter then took off from Arcata at 2:12 p.m. and again immediately turned off public tracking, indicating continued enforcement activity. We don't know exactly where the NCCSC helicopter went after that point, until it could be publicly tracked at 3:46 p.m., when it was south of Alder Point and headed back to Chico to land and finish the day. The Humboldt County Growers Alliance has been a big help building a quick network to track recently ramped up cannabis enforcement activity by the Humboldt Sheriff's Department. We spoke with HCGA President Hannah White of Emerald Queen Farms. To learn more about communications by their membership and how the local cannabis community might respond to the situation.
We have a weekly call on Wednesdays for our alliance members, and today one of our members shared a live feed from Salmon Creek of helicopter flying over his property. There were reports from members, cultivators, as well reported by KMUD yesterday of helicopters visiting legal, compliant, regenerative small family farms. 3 minutes certainly seems like a long time to be able to determine whether a site is a legal site or a not legal site. It just seems like a hearken to throwback days. We just heard a sheriff interview by you, April, that asked a lot of questions that a lot of cultivators are interested in. And, you know, I don't think we're getting the answers that we like. It doesn't feel good to have violation of airspace and seizure of our peace when we're legal compliant farms. Of course, we don't know if the sheriff has open or active investigations, but it does seem that there could be some due diligence done to increase the trust of the public and our legal licensed businesses by just doing a little bit of research ahead of their investigations of the hills and choose to not fly the publicly available APNs of our licensed farms. It would just go a long way to show some respect.
Has the Sheriff's Department or the NCCSC itself, the nonprofit that's funded by the Howard Buffett Foundation and funds the helicopter that's used by about, I think, four different counties in Northern California currently, have they reached out to the HCGA or others on trying to work? Because the claim is they want to work on human trafficking issues. That's the overarching claim they're saying. Have they tried to do any, like, community work in terms of working with the community directly to combat these issues as opposed to, you know, helicopter-based harassment, essentially?
I mean, the sheriff has been open to, you know, being able to share more information about what human trafficking and labor laws looks like. But, I mean, a lot of it is like they're just asking for people to call in complaints. You know, I think that it's in everyone's interest to see healthy working relationships in all of our business sectors. What doesn't feel specifically good about this is that workplace violations on cannabis businesses are being targeted by this funding rather than general workplace violations, which I think are well documented amongst almost all of the industries, right? Whether it's like timber, dairy, agriculture, baristas not being paid by a W-2, workers' comp insurance not being paid. These aren't issues that are specific to cannabis farms, right? These are issues that happen in all sectors. And it just seems that with our county in a hiring freeze and low budget, like, why we're prioritizing taking in funding that is doesn't seem to be in alignment with the county's support of the cannabis industry. County staff and county supervisors have really been, I would say, supportive over the last few years and, you know, supporting Appalachian's work and supporting some of our asks on a state level for, you know, direct-to-consumer sales, and really have been advocates. And so it just doesn't feel in alignment with our county's attitude and policies. And furthermore, the concern is that we're not seeing data come out, right? We did see that there were some arrests in the spring, charges brought around human trafficking and wage theft, labor violations, and I don't believe any of them have held up in court. So the concern is that we're spending a lot of time and resources from the Sheriff's Department in a county that has a lot of needs to be met by the Sheriff's Department, spending time on activities that don't seem to have the data backing it up or the activity that we're seeing.
Do you have a current message potentially from the HCGA for our cannabis growers here? And are there any kind of next steps you're already looking at to deal with this issue?
I mean, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of ways that we can, you know, we can, I don't know, like, just tell people to be prepared, you know, drink some milky oat tea, drink some chamomile. Like, we're all just going to have to practice patience and also using our voice. We have elected officials. The sheriff is an elected official, and it's important when people don't like the activities happening over the private land space to reach out to their supervisors, let them know how they feel about the activity, especially if it's like helicopters looking over your legal farm. Encourage people to reach out to their supervisors.
We truly appreciate anyone who is willing to speak out on the issue of ramped up cannabis enforcement and surveillance via the privately funded helicopter in use by the Humboldt Sheriff's Office. Please reach out to news@kmud.org on email, @kmudnews on social media, or give us a call and leave a voicemail at 707-923-2605 if you have any further information, coordinates, photos, or video documenting this event. We are especially interested in the timeline we're missing during the 2 and 3 p.m. hours when the helicopter was airborne, public tracking was turned off, and we don't know exactly where enforcement activity was occurring. We also encourage listeners to donate to KMUD to help support this coverage. We need more help tracking this increasingly growing and concerning cannabis enforcement operation. Head to kmud.org, give us a call at 707-923-2513, or come by our studios in Redway to donate and help our community band together and spread information. We'll continue to update you as this enforcement activity takes place. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Iran war whiplash continues as Trump abandons Hormuz toll plan. KPFA reports.
President Donald Trump is backing off his plan to charge ships a toll for passing through the Strait of Hormuz just one day after floating the idea of the United States imposing a 20% fee on all ships passing through the waterway. Trump said today that the strait is, quote, open to all ship traffic except for Iran, blaming Tehran's leadership for the disruptions. He said he'll instead pursue investment deals with Gulf states in place of the fee, telling reporters that Gulf leaders called him personally to propose the alternative, offering to invest, quote, billions and billions of dollars in the U.S.
You have Saudi Arabia, UAE, Qatar, Bahrain, and Kuwait, primarily, and then others. I spoke to all of them. And they would love to invest more money in the United States at record amounts, and that would be very acceptable. And this way, there's no fee. I don't like the concept of a fee, but at the same time, it's not fair that we're protecting this strait for the entire world, for China and everyone. I don't mind protecting it for China. I don't mind protecting it for anybody, but it's unfair that we're not in somehow compensated. And we've been doing this for many years. It's bothered me. 25 years ago, it bothered me.
The reversal comes as the United States reimposed its blockade on Iranian ports this afternoon. That follows a new wave of U.S. strikes on Iran and Iranian retaliation against commercial ships and U.S. allies, including Jordan, Kuwait, and Bahrain. Jordan's military said it intercepted 4 Iranian missiles. In a statement released through UN spokesperson Farhan Haq, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Turk called on both sides to de-escalate.
The return to wider hostilities in the Middle East between the U.S. and Iran is a huge setback for civilians in the region and beyond. It undermines peace efforts and deepens instability, with grave risks for human rights across the entire region. He said that all parties must respect and ensure respect for international humanitarian law, including by taking all necessary measures to protect civilians and civilian objects, and must respect their obligations under international human rights law. They must also independently and promptly investigate all alleged violations.
The back-and-forth strikes rattled global markets. European stocks fell and oil prices hit a one-month high before easing after Trump dropped the toll plan. Brent crude briefly topped $87 a barrel, though still well below the nearly $120 reached at the height of the war. Maritime officials had strongly objected to Trump's proposed fee. The International Maritime Organization said there's no legal basis for charging ships to transit an international strait, and shipping industry leaders warned it could upend the rules governing global trade. UN spokesperson Haq said that the United Nations opposed any tolls.
We believe that there must be free movement of shipping across the Strait of Hormuz. We stand against any efforts to restrict the freedom of movement of shipping. And you will have seen that the International Maritime Organization has also come out with a statement against any imposition of tolls by any party.
Last month, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio stated emphatically that, quote, no country had the right to charge tolls in international waters.
That's the law. It's an international waterway. No country is allowed to charge tolls or fees on an international waterway. That's existing international law. That's the way it is in international waterways all over the world, and that's the way we expect it'll be here. So I don't think we have anybody to convince around here in that regard. I think all the countries in this region would agree with us.
The Strait is a critical corridor carrying about a fifth of the world's oil and natural gas supply before fighting escalated earlier this year. Trump also told Fox News more U.S. strikes on Iran are coming in the next 2 days unless negotiations resume, warning Tehran, quote, you better make a deal or you're not going to have anything left. Regional mediators, including Pakistan, are working to try to revive the collapsed ceasefire. Senate Democrats blocked a $1 trillion defense bill today in protest of President Trump's ongoing war with Iran. The measure, which would set military policy for the year and include a pay raise for troops, failed to advance in a 50-46 vote along party lines. The vote comes a day after the White House told Congress it had resumed strikes on Iran, effectively ending the ceasefire. Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said the bill can't become what he called a, quote, permission slip for the administration's actions in Iran, now in its fifth month. He said Trump has no idea what he's doing in Iran.
The only thing he can say is Vietnam was worse. Oh, my God. A war that killed close to 50,000 Americans, a war that lasted almost a decade. A war that ripped America apart in ways that took decades to recover. That's what he compares Iran to? Oh my God. Trump's supposed ceasefire deal has completely collapsed. Our troops are coming under attack. The Strait of Hormuz is a minefield. Gas prices are going back up. And Donald Trump is totally out of his depth. In fact, Donald Trump is drowning in the Strait of Hormuz because he has no plan. He had no plan when he got America into this war, and he has no plan on how to get us out.
Republican leader John Thune called it a good bill and said the Pentagon needs the resources to keep the country safe. He's expected to bring the measure up again. Some Democrats say they won't support it unless it includes new limits to force an end to the war. Meanwhile, top House Democrats are split over a Republican-led effort to cut U.S. military aid to Israel. The amendment, introduced by Republican Congressman Thomas Massie of Kentucky, would block $3.3 billion in aid, most of it going to Israel's military. Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York said he'll vote against it. In a letter to colleagues, Jeffries called the measure overly broad, warning it could limit funding for humanitarian aid and embassy operations and restrict efforts to confront groups like Hamas and Hezbollah. He was joined by California Congressman Pete Aguilar, the third-ranking House Democrat. But Texas Democratic Congressman Greg Kassar, who chairs the Congressional Progressive Caucus, said he'll vote yes and is urging colleagues to join him.
It is past time for us to end this kind of military aid that the Israeli military has been using to commit atrocities and a genocide in Gaza, killing innocent people in Lebanon and beyond. And the Israeli government helped drag us into this war with Iran, which has been devastating for many innocent people and has been against the national security interests of our own country. And so that's why I'm going to be voting yes on this important amendment.
In his letter, Jeffries said Democrats aren't whipping the vote, given differing views within the caucus, but he called for what he described as a, quote, major reset in U.S. policy towards Israel, one which he hopes can maintain support for Israel's right to exist while also backing an independent Palestinian state.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. KMOD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMOD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Other stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmod.org. Road Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.